Hello, and welcome to Helvetic, a podcast. I'm David, and
I'm Joe.
Helvetic is a podcast where we discuss design and theology and the intersection of those two topics. Joe, do we have much feedback this week?
Yeah, we got a little bit of feedback. What do you got there in the Twitter sphere?
Looks like a few people mentioned us on Twitter, and let's see, we got Chris Ragsdale here, and a few people retweeted him. We really do appreciate it when you guys retweet us or tweet our episodes. It helps people learn about the show, and if you guys didn't tell people about the show, as Les on the Reform Pubcast is so fond of saying, people wouldn't know about the show, and then there would be no show.
No show. Faux show.
All right, so Joe, what are we going to be talking about today?
Today we are talking about doing work for free.
That is exactly what we're talking about. Two episodes ago, we discussed getting started as a designer and what that looks like. And often when you're getting started as a designer, and even after that, you're asked to do content, to create things for free. So we thought it would be good to discuss that. We thought it would be good to discuss maybe why you would want to do stuff for free and some tips related to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Joe, what are some reasons that somebody might be doing work for free?
Well, there's a variety of reasons you would be doing work for free. A lot of times when you're new, especially to creative fields, one of the ways to get your foot in the door, to get kind of either acknowledged by customers, to build up a portfolio, to get some name recognition out there, is to do free work. So that's one of the reasons that you would be doing it.
Sure. Yeah. It gives you stuff to put in your portfolio. It gets your name out there. Actually, a very common thing people will tell you when they're trying to get you to do work for free is this is really good exposure.
And exposure that pays the rent for sure.
I actually saw a meme that was somebody was asking a designer or maybe it was a programmer anyway, to do something for free, and it'll result in a lot of exposure. And then there was a thing from Oregon Trails that said, you have died of exposure.
That is amazing. I love it.
So this is an episode that we're recording live again. I should mention that. So if you see us interact with, or if you hear us interact with some of these comments that are coming through on Facebook, we will post a link to that in the show notes. To where you can find the live video recording of this episode, as well as where you can expect to find the next one.
The big things that we talked about is why you would want to, portfolio and just being a friend, somebody helping somebody out. Also, there's charitable organizations. Sometimes we want to support those charities. We want to maybe support our local church and help them by doing work for free and using those talents that God has
given us.
That God has given us to actually bless our, the local church body. Couple things for this that you'd brought up is why we wouldn't want to. So why would you not want to do this work for free?
Well, the basic idea is that you're not going to be given money in exchange for your services.
Yeah, there's that. The whole no money thing that makes it tough.
And we brought this up on a previous episode where we talked about getting started as a designer. Often these things spiral out of control. I think, if you're in a situation where you have the opportunity to do a quick project for somebody for free, that can often be a really good thing. It can help people out and all. But often what starts out, hey, can you tweak this logo, becomes, hey, can you make this logo, becomes, hey, can you buy this this font for me? And, on and on it goes until you've designed an entire website, business cards, and, full branding treatment for free, and your family hasn't eaten in 3 weeks.
Right, yeah. And I've actually run into that where, you kind of start, you offer to do one level of help for somebody. I'll help you, I'll do this for you. And then in the midst of that, you get project creep on a free project. And that's just a dangerous spot to get into. You can get caught in project creep on a free project, and that can be just a bad spot to be.
Yeah, La Rosa here says that, can you be my full design guy for free, is what a simple free project can do. See, this is why we do podcasts live, because we can get live feedback on these things. And that really, that definitely is what it can be. And honestly, that can be what even doing something for pay can become. You know, it becomes, you know, hey, we'll pay you $50 for a logo. And then again, the website comes in, or they just want it on a business card or whatever. And that brings up, I guess, the first like real tip for doing things for free is make sure you're working with a very clear contract. Yeah. I've been known to send fairly elaborate contracts, some of which may include clauses for, you know, what to do in case there's a zombie attack and one of the parties is zombified. I'll have you know that the other party is still required to complete the project in that case.
Nice. Sounds straightforward.
Yeah. But anyway, unless your brains are at risk, you know, you can't make that meeting when... Anyway.
Wow.
This is just getting worse. But anyway... Having that contract, even if it's relatively simple, that just spells things out, makes sure both parties know exactly what to expect so that there are no surprises. And you even have in there, if you want things added to this that constitute more than 5 hours of work, you can't expect to be charged extra.
Yeah. And something that I've used for simple contracts that can kind of, they make sure that you've got all the, you know, all your I's dotted and your T's crossed, as it were, is an app called Shake. I've used that a couple of times where it just kind of just makes sure that it kind of, what I like about the contract is it actually forces you to go through and ask those questions yourself of what you would, you know, all those little details that we'd want to make sure that you don't, that you don't miss in interaction with other people. And just because it's a free project, there's a lot of time when you think there's a free project, we don't need to worry about it. There's just no money changing hands. But there's an expectation upon your time and upon your energy. And let's face it, as a designer, your time is money.
Especially if you're freelancing.
Yeah. So if even though there's no money changing hands, they're the person that you're working for may have an expectation that you're going to give them a certain amount of time. And if you guys don't have that clearly spelled out, you can get stuck in a situation, especially like working for a friend or something, because, you know, you're going to end up with hurt feelings or something like that. And if you have a contract, that's something you guys have both agreed upon. You can both point back to and say, this is where, you know, this is what we agreed would happen. You can't be mad at me. You can be mad at the contract.
Yeah. I have a, if you Google, and we'll post this in the show notes, there's something called the contract killer. And this is really, really neat. It's very simply written, but it's very thorough. And it reeks of being written by a British person. So if that's your thing, I actually had to go through and just correct all the spelling to Americanized spelling because it seemed out of place.
Yeah, and one thing with it too is if it was written by a British person, it probably isn't valid in the United States. You might need to change that.
Yeah, there may be things in here that needed tweaked. I don't remember all the things. Oh, yeah. Under exclusive jurisdiction of English and Welsh courts. So you would want to change that.
Nope, leave that in.
But that's actually in brackets. Anything that you would want to change in this contract is well, not anything, but most of the things you'll want to change are in brackets. So anyway, there's lots of really great resources out there. We'll link to a couple of them. But having this, and again, when you're working for free, it can be tempting to say, well, what are they going to do? Not pay me if I don't do the thing? Or, you know, what's the worst that can happen? Honestly, the worst that can happen is the expectations aren't spelled out right. And like Joe said, either people walk away with hurt feelings, or as an alternative, you could end up getting really bad press because somebody expected that you were doing this thing. It wasn't communicated. You didn't do the thing. And, you know, maybe they ended up, you know, stuck holding a bad bowl of soup, as we mentioned two episodes ago.
Stew. It's stew.
Well, it's British. Anyway. No, so, you know, they can end up in a really tough spot. And now you've hurt that person because of, you know, poor communication. The contract just gets everything on paper. And you don't have to worry about it at that point. Right. So that's kind of an overall thought. I thought maybe we could go through one by one here the different cases that you might be doing work for free. So I have for a friend, for random people, maybe business associates, whatever. And then I have crowdsourcing and ministry. So the reasons that you would want to do work for a friend are pretty obvious, right? You want to be a pal.
Right.
Like yep. Joe and I, we're pals. But another side benefit to this to this thing that you're doing for your friend is that you can use it in your portfolio most likely. And again, your contract should probably spell that out. If you're planning to use the thing that you're working on in your portfolio, which I would say you should be, the contract can spell that out.
Yeah, I think on any free work, you should definitely put in some sort of a clause that indicates that it's okay for you to use that in your portfolio, even if you're assigning the ownership of the work over to the people for whom you're working. Like, it's not, you're not just licensing them to use it, but actually giving it to them.
Right.
There should still be some sort of an understanding that, and by the way, I may or may not use this in my portfolio in the future going forward, just so that they know, you know, if it appears in some sort of an online portfolio, they won't go like, what's our church logo doing in here? What's our company logo doing here? It should be understood clearly that that's something that you do when you're building a portfolio.
And you may get to the end of the project, honestly, and realize that, you know what, this didn't turn out like I wanted it to. The client's expectations or the client's expectations, I just did air quotes over Joe's face. The client's expectations were different from what you were expecting to make that you thought would be perfect for your portfolio. So just don't end up using it. So when Joe said the contract should say that you may or may not use it, like they shouldn't be, you shouldn't be also accidentally contracted to have to put it in your portfolio.
They're disappointed that it didn't make the cut.
But my dad here says that when a client or when somebody you're doing the project for free sees you behave professionally and have a contract, it punctuates that the value of what you're doing for them. And that's definitely the case. I think that if that person were looking to hire somebody and they saw how professional you were, having a contract and, you know, wearing a shirt with buttons, they're going to be that much more likely, just shaking his head at me.
So not necessary.
They're going to be that much more likely to hire you in the future because they've seen that you can be a professional.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's valid. And I think,
I just realized Joe's not wearing a shirt with buttons.
You got that right.
That was not the joke I was trying to make.
I was just wondering. Okay.
sorry, what were you saying?
I have no idea, but it was brilliant. let's see. So when there's a contract involved, I think, with the app Shake that I'm talking about, it kind of basically just asks you a series of questions and you fill out the information as you go. And then in the end of that series of questions, it's drawn up a contract for you. And then you can share that with a client and they can digitally sign it and send it back to you, or they can print it out, sign it and send it back to you.
And I think before you even get to the point of having a contract, I imagine that a lot of the questions that this app asks you are questions you're going to need to ask a client.
Yeah, absolutely.
I use a service called Typeform. It's a really, really neat, it's kind of like SurveyMonkey or Google Forms, but it's really, really elegantly designed. They have a free service. The free service doesn't let you do, like, if they answer this, then ask them this kinds of layouts, but it's pretty powerful even without that. You can create on there kind of a standard set of questions. You know, if it's for a website, you could ask them, you know, are you expecting this to work on mobile devices? Which, by the way, they should be. How many pages are you expecting this to have? Are there going to be any image assets that you're going to need me to create for this project? You know, all those sorts of questions you can ask them and get that data in a very, you get that data to them in a form that feels very professional and it's neatly organized in an email that's sent to you. So I really like that. I just used it to do engagement photos for a couple and the service worked flawlessly. So we'll link to Typeform in the, and that goes for free and paid projects, but we'll link to that in the show notes.
Yeah. And I have a logo design questionnaire that I've used that I got off of some, here's a questionnaire you should walk through with your clients before you actually do a logo. Basically some blog posts that a design blog put up about that. I have that. I saved it into my Google Drive and I just have that to use with clients. So I actually print that out and take it with me when I go talk to clients first. So it's kind of a introductory here. What are we doing? Where are we going with this? And what's our plan on it? So both of those would be useful.
Yeah. And so La Rosa on chat just said that he's hired Joe because he doesn't wear shirts with buttons. So I guess it really depends on your client.
It's true. Yeah. Because those button shirts will drive some people away.
Also, on our last episode, we're getting live feedback right now. On our last episode, Craig, the fellow who made a joke about or didn't make a joke about Photoshop NT, he said that he's a new father and he's sleep deprived. So we'll go ahead and give him a break Nope. And stop making fun of him for that.
No, you're but, still going to be, we're still making fun of you, buddy.
Yeah, the episode nice where we made fun of him is going to live on in infamy, so it doesn't matter what we do.
Yeah. I've been there, man. I got six, and I know the baby brain for sure.
So I guess another tip when you're doing work for free is making it clear to the client, to your friend, that what you're doing is a one-time thing. And you know, your friend may ask you again to work on something for free, but the fact that you're doing it for free this time doesn't mean you're going to do it for free next time.
Right.
And it certainly doesn't mean that he can tell all of his friends that you do work for free.
Yes.
It's actually a really good idea anytime you're doing design work to ask your client to not tell people what you're charging, because that can be, you know, you can be held to that, especially if you're growing as a designer. You're going to want to charge more the longer you've been doing it. And you don't want people saying, oh, yeah, I got this great logo design for $50. Talk to David. And by the time that guy comes to you, you're charging $300. And, you know, $300 might have seemed reasonable until he had the expectation set by his friend that it was going to be $50.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. And that's also another issue that I've run into where there's been some word of mouth and people are interested in getting me on board to design a logo, other people in the same general fields and whatnot. And then... but then they've had a conversation with someone who was a friend, and they're a friend of a friend. A friend of a friend doesn't get the same discount as a friend.
Yeah, the friend of a friend discount, that's 15%.
Yeah, exactly.
Not 100.
Right. Slightly less discount.
Another thing I think is really important is the idea of making sure that your friend understands the value of what you're giving him. And actually, right. this is regardless of... regardless of whether you're doing it for free or not, like, you want to make sure that the person you're working with understands what design is, because designers will have this problem where if you needed open heart surgery, nobody would say that, oh, you know, any guy with a scalpel is able to do that. But when it comes to design work, a lot of people have this assumption that good design can be done by anybody with Photoshop.
Yeah.
And so when you say, I want to charge $300 to do your logo, people will go, well, why can't I just get my nephew? You know, he downloaded Photoshop illegally. Why can't I just get him to make a logo for him? And, you know, he can do that. And if he goes and he does that, he'll have a logo that, you know, looks like a 12-year-old with Photoshop designed it. But a lot of people can't tell the difference. Like, if there's sparkly, shiny stuff, they can't, when they look at the product that you give them and the product that their nephew gives them, they can't necessarily tell the difference there. So one of the things that can be helpful is to really just sit down with them and explain, this is what design is. Design is not just aesthetics. Design, I'm actually looking at a book here called Universal Principles of Design. Like, there are principles here. There are rules in design that decide what things mean to people, what visual things mean to people. When it comes to logo design, there's all kinds of research that you're going to want to do into the history of their company, what it is that they do, the clients that they're looking for, that their friend with Photoshop is not going to do. And this isn't to make them feel like, oh, he's such a good friend, he's doing all this for me. But if it's done for free, they're going to feel like they should have control over it, in one sense, because it doesn't have value to them. And it's not going to occur to them that your services have value. So they're not going to treat them as if they have value. Does that make sense, Joe?
Yeah, very much. Yeah, I've totally run into the same thing myself where people have this assumption, since it's free, that it's no big deal. I mean, you know, you did this one thing for me, for instance, and now it's no big deal for you to do another thing for me for free. And they don't have any sense of, well, you have to realize I did that one thing for you for free, and I stayed up, you know, till 3 a.m, got up at 7 and went into work the next day and tried to be a functioning human being so that I could get your free thing done for you. They don't have any sense of that. And also, as far as like you're saying, you know, the proverbial, you know, cousin with Photoshop issue, there are some people that are really gifted and can come up with some really neat designs and really neat things. But if you're hiring someone who's just practicing or just learning, there's a sense in which you're going to get, it's kind of a crapshoot. You're going to get, you might get some neat stuff and but you won't get a balanced, consistent, you know, measured design. And oftentimes it's like what I've said as far as like when people talk about, you know, the having the tools. So it's like, I have a hammer. Well, then you can build a house, right? Because you have a hammer. Right. And that's what carpenters use. They build houses. So you can probably do it too. But
you also need nails. I mean, come on.
Yeah, let's not be crazy. Yeah, it's a good point.
Photoshop and Illustrator.
That's right. But what I've said before is, you know, this is this job is easy. Any 5-year-old could do this job with 20 years experience.
That doesn't make sense, Joe.
That's right. That's the whole point. It's kind of like that old the old anecdote where, and I don't know if this is completely, I don't even have enough details to make it seem non-apocryphal, so I don't know what the story is on it. I remember hearing a story about a guy, basically they'd had a person who'd done a job designing a rocket. It was a rocket or a missile for the military, and they called this guy back in. They were having some problem with the rocket, and it wouldn't work. They were running into these issues with it. They couldn't get it to fire off, and so basically they called this guy in to work on the rocket. And again, like I said, it's probably apocryphal. Anyway, it didn't matter. The point of it is he goes in and he basically messes around with a rocket for 5 minutes, bangs on it in a couple spots with a hammer, and
it works. Yeah.
It fires off. It's ready to go, and they can use it and blah, blah. Their mission is saved, and they can actually launch or whatever they needed to do with it. So he sends them a bill for $50,000. And they're like, you were here for 5 minutes. You hit it with a hammer twice. Anyone here could have done that. And he said, okay. I forgot to itemize the bill. That's the problem. No problem. And so he sent them another bill for $5 for hitting it with a hammer and for $49,995 for knowing where to hit it with a hammer. And that's the difference of experience. I think I've made my point.
No, but that is a really good story.
There's this guy who didn't get paid enough, and he should have gotten paid enough. The end.
the everything that we try to learn as designers is something that they're paying for, which I guess actually they're not paying for. So another way that you could end up doing free work is something called crowdsourcing. And I don't know if everybody's heard of what crowdsourcing is. So Joe, why don't you just explain what that is?
I can't, because I don't know what you're referring to.
Oh, have you seen?
I truly don't. You put that on the list and I was like, I hope he tries to explain that because I don't know what he means.
I just thought, all right, well, it's a good thing that I asked the question.
I'm pretty high tech.
Now let me answer the question that I asked.
That's something you kids do these days.
I don't sound like a jerk.
Go.
So crowdsourcing is when you, a company will decide, well, we don't really want to pay full price for this thing. And we're not even sure what it is that we're looking for in terms of a logo, for example.
Okay.
And so they'll pay a fixed fee, say $300 for a logo, and they will get submissions from, I don't know, maybe up to 100 designers,
right,
who will submit logos, and they get to choose one. And typically the way these things work is they can iterate on those things that they've chosen. So they can say, hey, I like these three. Can you guys make sure to, you know, add the color blue because that's important to our branding or whatever.
Right.
So Joe, what are your thoughts on doing that? Cause I know like these sites can be really controversial.
Yeah. I go,
among designers, not really among ordinary people.
Among ordinary people, it's a great idea because, I mean, it's like, that's the, it's a typical, there's several, quite a few sites that do this. The company that we work for, at a higher level did this, HarperCollins did this recently, where they basically said, we wanted this logo for this thing that's happening. And, anyone who wants to, any employee can submit their design and you're going to get this amount of money and all that. But the problem,
if it's chosen, yeah.
If it's chosen, but the problem with these things, and 99 Designs is another one.
CrowdSpring. I did a lot of work with CrowdSpring.
Yeah, I think they might have actually. I don't think they're around anymore, but I think
that's
they might
my
have
fault.
Gone around. Yeah, I
wasn't doing good
there
work.
There was this designer, McCookie, if I recall. No. anyway, these, what these sites do is they basically say, or like what our company did is they said, our company did a design contest. They call them a design contest or crowdsourcing. And they get, you know, dozens at least of designs to choose from. People spend a lot of time and energy. I mean,
little time and energy.
Yeah. So, and that's true, actually. I'm not going to get into details.
Yeah, we'll get into this.
But there's, I personally, like in that particular one, I submitted three designs because I was like, hey, it's for the company. I want to do this, da, da, da. And then I didn't even make like the, like the, they sent out a list of like, here's a honorable mentions. I wasn't on any of it. Like, ah, come on. I put some blood, sweat, and tears into that. But
that was the problem.
Yeah.
They were like, this is disgusting.
Yeah, that's true. They hated the sweat, especially. But you end up putting your time and energy into this design. You put, as a designer, your time is money. That the time that you have to put into, especially freelance, like David was saying earlier, is money. And so you put some of that time into creating these designs with no knowledge of whether or not you're going to get anything back for it. So you can submit one design or 50 designs, and maybe you'll get something and maybe you'll get nothing. What was your experience? I've actually haven't submitted a bunch to websites, but you were saying that you had, David. What was your experience with that?
Yeah. So I think there's two sides to this. One is, does the service really help the person who's using it? Who's asking for the design? And then the other is, does it help the designer? And I think the answer to both of those questions is very nuanced. And LaRosa actually says, live feedback here, he says he almost used 99 Design for the cover of his first book. So for my experience, was very early on as a designer, and I was just starting to learn things like color theory, things like using Illustrator, things like trying to use the pen tool. I was experimenting with fonts. And so for me, I found that what Crowdspring or these crowdsourcing sites did for me was they provided an unlimited supply of prompts for creating things. Yep. They supplied me with lots of ideas for, I never got paid for any of them, but they supplied me with lots of ideas for, I'm going to create this thing. For a company that, you know, sells beard oil, or for a company that sells, you know, little widgety, you know, vintage widgety things on Pinterest. And it really stretched me as a designer, because I went from creating, you know, really high tech looking logos to creating really community, you know, like granola community.
Crunchy logos.
Yeah, crunchy logos.
Yeah.
And I think that looking back on that, I would not be as good at design as I am now if I hadn't been doing that. There'd be whole like realms of design that I wouldn't even have, or, you know, realms of style that I wouldn't have even experimented in if I hadn't tried those.
Right.
So for me, it was relatively positive. At the time, I hated it because I thought I was going to get paid like every time. I was like, this is great. And then somebody just swooped in, and they would use a rainbow color, and like rainbow colors for whatever reason were in. And like, if you had like 8 colors in your logo, you were going to get picked. But I didn't want to do that because I had, you know, integrity.
Right. Well, yeah. And you didn't have to worry about the customer trying to get it printed. Seeing the, like,
yes.
Hey, here's this really expensive thing you'll never be able to afford to put on anything.
Well, and actually that's another thing that I learned from the process was all these, like, at first I would just create one logo, and then I saw all these other people would create, you know, here's what it would look like in black and white, and here's what it would look like on black, and here's what it would look like. And they were creating alternate treatments of the logo. And I learned that, oh, that's a thing that you need to do for logos. And again, this was way back in the early days of starting, but I learned a ton through that service. I think that right now, if you were to ask me, hey, David, do you want to go join this 99 Designs website and make some logos, I would say heck no. Like, I actually have a chance at, like, really getting paid. Like, if I put something out on Facebook or whatever, there's a decent chance I would be able to find work that way. So I wouldn't recommend it to somebody who's been doing this for years, but I would definitely recommend it to somebody who's starting out.
Yeah, I think it's a, like you said, it's basically something that I've looked for online sometimes is just like a daily design contest, or like something that I've used to just force me to learn how to do things is like the Reddit Photoshop battles or something like that, where they throw up this design and you have to come up with something creative with it. And it just forces you to use Photoshop in ways that you wouldn't think of using it otherwise. And stuff like that can be really helpful too. But yeah, I haven't actually done any of this 99 Design stuff. I have a portfolio that stretches back a long ways, but I was thinking of adding some more modern stuff to it, more recent stuff to it. And I was actually considering, you know, trying some of these things out. But there is definitely there's two sides to that. One of them is that typically most designers don't make any money on those sites. They just don't make anything on the sites. There are people who know how to, that's the word I'm looking, well, basically kind of hack the system. And it's not like, it's not cheating in the sense of like, they're not like, you know, using code to hack in and make sure that your designs don't show up or anything like that. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about they basically know the clickbait version of logos. So if you want a logo made, they'll do the clickbait version for you, and you're going to get this logo that you think's really cool. And then you're going to see that, you know, 50 other people have gotten basically the same logo with different text.
So true. It's so true.
So they know how to make that happen, and they're not putting the energy and effort into it. And because they know how the system works, they go, okay, I can spend 15 minutes or half an hour on this design and I'm done. I'm not going to put more into it than that because I got to get 20 of these out today.
Yeah.
And then those are the guys that are getting paid.
And from the other side of it, if you're thinking about using one of these services, I think you have to keep in mind that you're susceptible to that. Like, you're probably not going to be the guy who is smart enough to sniff those out and to avoid picking those and to pick something that's genuinely good. And so we've got a bunch of comments here. One is from the designer side of things. Paul Cox says, when I was starting out at freelancing, I looked at all those crowdsourcing sites and eventually found Elance and Odesk.
Yeah.
They're not crowdsourcing, but bidding sites that work. So these are resources for finding paid work, I think.
Yeah. I've heard especially good about Upwork. I haven't tried Elance, but I've heard good about both of those sites, actually.
Yeah.
And that's a really good point.
And then getting you know, going, circling back around, LaRosa also said that as a customer, it's good if you're not sure the direction that you want to go, you can get several mock-ups. But I hated the idea of a designer doing work and not having it selected and compensated. I think that the interesting thing is that you can get multiple mock-ups from a good designer. And the nice thing about a designer, if you don't know what you're looking for, is that he will handhold you through that process. And he'll ask the questions like, well, like for your book cover, LaRosa, he'll ask the questions, well, you know, who's your target demographic? You know, what are their ages? What's the book about? They'll ask all of these questions, really try to understand that. And you're going to get to interview with that person and talk to them for an hour and express your vision. And then they're going to be able to try it. If they're a good designer, they're going to be able to come up with something that's genuinely good. So I think all in all, I think these sites result in lower quality work, lower quality branding and all of that.
Yeah. Like I'm thinking of like the last logo that I did. I think I did something like 20 thumbnails initially to show them of kind of like, here's some directions we can go. Here's some thumbnails of, you know, kind of rough directions. And then we refine that down to, like 5 treatments that were very different, but kind of, you know, here's 5 different ways we can go. And then we got refined that down to a final one. And also in the process I had, it was for a midwifery practice. And I had her send me different logos and different ideas that she liked, things that she liked, because that's way out of my wheelhouse as far as like, you know, my normal frame of reference or normal like logo designs that I've done. So I wanted to make sure I was actually, you know, hitting what she was thinking of and ideas and kind of touching upon ideas that she's thinking of. So that's there's a big advantage there actually hiring a designer to get that.
Yeah, for sure. But again, you know, if you're just getting started, that can be a really good place to start. I think it's more helpful for learning tools and for learning basic things like Gestalt and basic design principles. It's not good because it can give you an unrealistic expectation of what design is going to be like in the sense that you can feel like, oh, well, now I don't actually have to meet with the client. I just have to get a brief from him and then I can take off and run with it. And I think that good designers don't do that. Good designers really do take the time to work. So you're not going to get that practice working on the crowdsourcing sites. But again, the advantage to the crowdsourcing sites is there are a lot of skills that they can teach you, and there's a chance that you're going to make money. Like there is a, you know, however small the chance is, there is a chance. Whereas if you were just like making up company names and making up stuff on your own, there's obviously no chance of getting paid for that.
Yeah. And there's a lot of times you see the good thing with that, as far as doing, you know, working against real briefs or working against real requests from customers, is a lot of times when you go looking at like, if you go look at like Behance or Dribbble or something like that, and are looking at people's logo mockups, you go, well, yeah, that's a real convenient name for for your logo that you came up with there, but it doesn't sound like a real company. It sounds like, wow, that's a nice balanced set of letters there that was easy for you to kern. That's great. You know,
you changed the name of the company 3 times to make it lay out right in your logo.
Exactly.
Like, I'm using this font and this size and this mark, and what am I going to name it now?
Right. Yeah. In fact, I've done that to a couple of clients. I've said, no, your name isn't going to work for this.
It's like,
no, I'm kidding.
I heard a story about a pastor who was preparing a sermon. He's like, I know exactly what I'm going to say. I know my 3 points. I just have to find a text.
Yeah. Just kind of find the verses to back it up.
All right. So, and that actually brings us this idea of ministry to the last possibility of why you might. So we covered, you know, you might be working for friends or for businesses that you're not friends with, but still doing it out of the goodness of your heart, maybe. We've covered crowdsourcing, and now we're talking about the idea of doing it for ministry. I think the most common use case is doing it for your church. I know a lot of designers end up, some of their first work that they're doing for something other than, you know, a company that they made up or crowdsourcing, works out to be their church. So why would you want to design something for free for your church or for a ministry, Joe?
Well, a couple of big reasons for it. One of them is that what is in place and representing your church or ministry currently is so terrible that you'd like to make it better.
Comic Sans. Papyrus?
Those are the only bad fonts? Is that it? That's what you got?
Well, they're the overused fonts in churches. Jokerman.
Also overused in churches.
Yes.
Because it was used once in a church. So sometimes it's because you want to make, you feel like what's present there doesn't represent your church body as well as it could. So it's, you want to improve that.
Sure.
Both to kind of be honoring to the Lord in your church, and also just because you are gifted in certain areas and there's a need, you know, they're asking for assistance with, you know, branding or logo design or website work or whatever particular area of design that you do. And that's an area. A lot of times, that's kind of been an interesting experience for me historically with churches, that there is a sense that somebody who comes in and does plumbing or carpentry work or something like that, something hands-on with the church, that seems to be taken a little more seriously than somebody that comes and does design work or graphics or things like that for a church. Which has been kind of interesting. I'm not sure why that is, but it's probably just something to do with the tangible aspect of it.
Sure. Yeah, I think that the design everybody expects you to do for free, so it stands to reason that churches would. But churches also do have an uncanny ability to expect people to do things for free, like even plumbers, right? Like even plumbers fall into that, even though it is something tangible. So my dad just commented here, live feedback. My dad just commented that you shouldn't be doing it so that God will owe you one. And I think that brings up 2 bad reasons in my mind to be working for your church. One is, out of some idea that God's going to owe you one. I'd like to think that none of our listeners are thinking that they can put God in their debt, but you can't.
Well, you can't.
Yeah.
But if your design is really, really good, you still can't.
But then the flip side of that might be this idea that you feel guilty. This idea that, you know, God saved me, you know, the least I can do for him is this thing. And I think that both of those are false, and both of those are proven false by the gospel. You know, everything that we've ever needed has come from Christ. And then at the same time, you know, the only payment that we could ever render to God is payment that Christ gave. There's no sense in which we can level accounts with the infinite Son of God dying on the cross for us. So both of those are really, really bad reasons. Can you think of any other bad reasons, Joe?
Bad reasons for doing design for a church?
Like misconceptions people might have. Like,
no, I think we've covered it all. We have exhaustively addressed that issue.
Totally. Here's one more.
Offhand, no, I'm not thinking of something else. So.
I guess another reason might be just this idea that, oh, if it's for the church or if it's for the ministry, it's for God, and I should be doing it for free. And I think that Paul debunks that in I think it's 1 Corinthians 9, where he says that where he references, "Do not muzzle the ox while it's threshing," and he that's an Old Testament law, and he applies it to pastors and to elders, and he actually says that. Do you think God really cared about the ox? No, he wrote this. It's a broader principle than that. And the principle is that, you know, if people are working, they ought to get paid for their work. Paul also gives another principle in Timothy, where he says that if you don't work, you don't eat. And I think it stands to reason on the other side, if you work, you should eat. That's not to say that it's wrong to do work for free. By any means, Paul actually in 1 Corinthians 9 is talking about how he doesn't take any payment for what he does. He refuses to for various reasons, but he's not obligated to. And I think that's an important thing to understand: is you're not obligated because right. It's for your church. You can still charge. Especially if you need money. Like for me, it would be easy to do design work for the church because I have a job. But if I didn't. And I were just looking for clients, I would not say, "Oh, I don't, I'm only going to work for free if it's for the church or for a ministry."
Yeah. And yeah, I think that's kind of a bit of a dangerous dichotomy there. It's basically, another way. Yeah. Cause if you, another thing, this is something your dad said as well, is for great exposure. Just think about the exposure you could get at your church for doing church things for free.
That's an interesting question. Like, what do you think of the idea of you do something for your church, but you ask that, like, you know, maybe at the bottom of the website, it mentions your business. I don't necessarily have a problem with that. I think it's one thing to ask for that to be put in the sanctuary. And another thing to ask for on the website, they mention who made the website because you did it for free. Not as a way to say, "Look at me, I did this for free," or anything, but just as a way to generate further business so that, you know, people who attend the church will, when they're thinking of websites, they go, "Oh, I know somebody who did good work there." I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
No, I don't think that's, I have no problem with that. I think it's, you know, it's a little different story than like asking the pastor to mention you in the sermon something.
Oh, he'll mention you in the sermon. Let me tell you.
But only if you ask him to, and then he won't mention you in the way you're hoping.
Yeah. I mean, there's the biblical principle of don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. But I think that has more to do with donations, where you're trying to do, you know, when you're giving unto God in a worshipful manner than in a this sort of pragmatic, you're providing a service not as an act of worship to God, but as a service to your congregation, to the pastor. There's that middle element that I think changes things.
Yeah.
Another live comment we got here is LaRosa says that he was once turned down by his church to do a free website, and they paid somebody to do it, and it was terrible, and it hurt his feelings, understandably, because he had given them mock-ups and everything, and they chose to go with something worse.
Yeah, that's a hard thing.
It's hard to understand, and I think this relates to any field where you might be doing free design. It's hard to understand that people don't understand what good design is. And the reason they're paying you, or the reason they're asking you to do this for them, is because they don't understand what good design is. But the problem is that everybody thinks that they understand what good design is, and they don't. And so you're going to run into, I mean, like this story that LaRose has given us is so common, and it's so easy to get hurt by that. And it's very understandable. I think it's helpful to keep in mind that it's not that I don't know in LaRosa's situation, but often it's not that they think that you're stupid or anything like that. It's that they saw one thing in this design, this other design, that they liked. Maybe they liked the fact that it had a cat in it, or they liked the font, or they saw one thing that they liked, and that was enough to throw over the whole decision. Like, even though the UX was terrible, the user experience was terrible, even though all these things were horrible about it, that was enough. And, they really liked the fact that it had their cat in it or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's a reason that, you know, things like clickbait articles work.
Exactly.
Because they prey upon emotions and kind of a snap judgment sort of things rather than really, really thinking out what's wise and what's useful.
Yeah.
And so, and the same thing happens with design. You'll, you know, people will, they'll grab something just because it's, just because it, it hits kind of a here now feeling rather than something, I'm not making any sense.
No, I mean, I think you're right. I think that people, the sorts of things appeal to people, the snappy, the shiny stuff appeals to people. And that's why Web 2.0 arguably took off, like the Web 2.0 style.
Yeah.
I think this really does underscore the importance of really talking to people and really explaining to them the decisions behind, you know, the design that you've created and really making sure that, like, you're not just this wizard who creates shiny things. You are, to them, a person who, you're a thinker. To them, they're hiring somebody to help them think and to think for them, rather than just a content producing machine.
Right. And you're the, I mean, ultimately, you are the expert. They're hiring you as an expert, the expert opinion, and you can, you know, you can provide them with three different treatments, but you're not going to provide them with any bad ones.
Yeah.
So you provide them with three, and all of which are good for different reasons. And even if they don't pick your favorite one, they're not going to pick something that you hate because you're not showing them something you hate just to get a rise out of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And another thing I think that applies to LaRosa's story is if LaRosa had been contracted by that church to do the website for free, I think things would have gone like if they're the sort of people who hired this person to do something for free and it turned out terrible, you know, there's a good chance that it would have been even more painful to try to create that website for them. One of the blessings that I have in working full time and only accepting jobs on the side for free is that I get to be really picky. But even if you're freelancing, you have to know when to fire a client, especially if you're doing something for free.
Yeah,
and that needs to be a clause that you put in your contract. Look, if you're just ridiculous. Yeah.
The if you're ridiculous clause.
Yeah. Not to be confused with the zombie clause, which is the ridiculous clause.
Yeah. That's proving that you are ridiculous.
But yeah, like to have a way to say if this ends up taking more of this, more than this amount of time, or I'm going to provide you with this many mockups. And if you don't like them, I'll provide you with this many more mockups, but we're not going to play this game forever. You are limited to 20 mockups or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Specific numbers of like, and then.
And revisions.
And revisions, exactly. Like once we settle on a mock-up, now you get three revisions.
Exactly.
And we're done. Yeah.
Yeah, and all of this, I think a lot of what we're saying applies to ministries. I think it applies even more to doing work for free for ministry, just because there's so many weird cultural expectations surrounding doing work for ministries and doing work for churches that I think it's really important to make sure, even more so than if you're working for a friend, that you're really clear on stuff that we talked about in terms of what expectations are and all of that.
Yeah.
I only have one more thing here left in my notes, Joe, and that is that doing work for free, especially for ministries, is not an opportunity to be lazy. We're taught whatever we do, do our work heartily as for the Lord. And I think that applies. That's not to say there's not room for doing a quick and dirty job if that's what the client is looking for.
Yeah.
But you better do a good job on the quick and dirty job. You know, you know, if you say I'm going to spend 2 hours on this and I'm going to do it for free, and if you want more time, I'm going to charge or whatever, you'd better actually spend the 2 hours on it. And that's important, both in terms of Christian obedience, and also because if you're going to be putting something, if you're going to want to put this on your portfolio, you're going to want it to look like you put all your work into it. So there's the command, and then there's the pragmatic.
Right. Yeah, I think there's a tendency to think that you're I think this kind of can circle back to the contract, because just as you are in your contract clearly specifying to the client what your expectations are with them and what you're agreeing to do with them, that also is also putting you under a specific obligation of what you're agreeing to do. And I think it's important that for integrity's sake, for Christian witness, that you actually do what you say you're going to do. And I think there is a tendency to say, well, I'm not getting paid for this, so I don't have to, you know, I can just slough this off to the side. Or if a paying client comes in, I can just stop doing this work that I agreed to do until the paying client is gone. And there may be some degree in which, especially if it's a bigger project, you have to kind of go, you have to realize this is going to have to fit in between other projects as I have time, but you're going to spell that out in the contract. So you'll have that clearly understood between both parties so that you're not going to get burned in the process.
Yeah. I just imagine if Jesus had decided, well, this isn't a paying gig.
Well, yeah.
All right. So why don't we, I think we've covered this fairly well. If you guys have feedback, we would love to hear it. We've gotten live listener feedback. That's been really cool. But you can feel free to tweet us. You can feel free to leave us a review on the on iTunes. We also have a Facebook group. You can find out about all of that if you go to helveticpodcast.com. Joe, do you have any recommendations for this episode?
Yeah, I'm going to go back to the recommendation I did earlier, which is if you are trying to do contracts, quick contracts, I really like the application Shake. It's available on the App Store. You just look for the word Shake, and we can link to it in the show notes. But it basically has some really good sample contracts. They have things that you can pay for in there. They do have some in-app purchases, but you can do basic contracts for free in there. And they are actually, it's actually, you know, vetted by lawyers. It's not just some dude thinking that he's got the a good idea. It's actually been reviewed by legal teams to know that it's pretty nice. Good. I mean, if you're getting into heavier duty, bigger things, you're probably going to end up doing more than just a little app on your iPad. But I found it to be useful.
And a lot of these contracts are never going to be used in a court of law. You really hope that they're not.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But they should be ready for it in case it comes to that.
They should be such that they would stand in a court of law. But they really, the main point of it is to facilitate communication between you and the client. Make sure you guys are all on the same page. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's called Shake, and it's available on the iTunes App Store for iOS devices.
Awesome. Well, my recommendation, actually, I've been drinking out of this whole time. It's Contigo Thermos. This is a weird recommendation. I'm recommending not just their thermos, but I also have their a water bottle from them. And like, I don't often think about recommending products like these, but these products are well made, and it just like I've actually found that I've wanted to recommend them. And when something is that well made that you find yourself wanting to recommend it, I think that says something about the product. But they're always, I mean, they're made in a way that they, if they're designed not to leak, you know, they don't leak. This one has a lock on it. This thermos has a lock on it so that you can't. You can't press the button to drink out of, but I've literally never had to use that lock because the whole thing is so secure anyway.
And you don't have kids.
And I don't have kids. So anyway, like I feel completely safe leaving this thermos on my desk with my computer and I know that it's not going to leak. Everything that I've bought from them has been really good. So, they seem well designed. Like unlike, you know, if you go to Walmart and buy a $5 water bottle, you're going to get something that's, you know, going to leak on you.
By the same token, I'd actually like to recommend the Carrot 12-ounce paper hot cup.
Joe's making
City
fun of me.
Industry. This is it's a little less expensive. It's available for free.
These are the paper cups at our offices.
And I have also found that I can leave it on top of David's desk with computers and electronic equipment nearby because they're basically guaranteed not to leak.
So dumb.
It was empty.
Joe's making fun of me because I recommended a cup. But no, in all seriousness, they make good stuff. It seems really well designed, really solid. And they're not super expensive. This thermos cost me $18 and the water bottle I have cost me $9. So that's my recommendation. Well, thank you guys for listening and we hope you'll join us again next time.
Awesome. See ya.
And now for a legal disclaimer.
David and I both work for Olive Tree, a division of HarperCollins Christian Publishers. We produce these podcasts for ourselves, not for our company, and the opinions we express in this podcast are our own opinions and not necessarily those of Olive Tree.